Osiris.
RJ. Or should I say RJ?
Yeah. Man, if you could do the Dave from 2006, you're in good shape, or bad shape, depending on how you look at it. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm good. This is the first moment I've sat down since I've been awake. It's, you know, whatever we've decided to do with ourselves, you know what I mean? Like, having kids, having dogs, and working at a small business that is trying to grow rapidly and trying to be the dominant force in live music. That is what we're doing here right now. It is something every day. My son asked me this morning, do you think you're ever going to get a new job if you get bored? And I said, I don't know what boredom is. And he was like, what do you mean? And I went off on a tangent. And he was like, oh, that doesn't sound boring. I don't even know what I said.
Here's the deal. I am just, in the past 15 minutes, I can finally feel my face again because I had to go to the dentist today to get two fillings fixed. You know, they're not new cavities, but it's like, I had my first cavities when I was like five, and I always brush my, I think I just like, whatever, I'm like susceptible to that. And I'm still terrified of the dentist, even though I'm 43 years old. You know, I like went in there with my headphones on, listened to a podcast, and like, getting the shot of Novocaine before they do the actual thing. It's just like, it's so uncomfortable and I dread it every time. And then once it actually happens, I'm like, that's not actually that big of a deal. So now I can feel my face again, which means I can drink coffee.
I had some dental work done about a month ago, and I'm really glad to hear that at 43, you're still afraid of the dentist, because I hate the dentist. I hate everything about it. I'm like clenching my chest while I'm like holding my phone while they're drilling into my tooth.
And you're trying to like stay relaxed, but you can't.
Well, I'm a grown man.
Yeah. Like, you should be chill. You should be okay.
I should be fine. And the woman who's my dentist was like, are you okay? Is this too much? And I was like, no, it's fine. Just get it over with.
Fine. Everything's fine.
We've got a great comment right out the gates here. Tyler Broadback says, Broadback. Dental appointments are like hearing Can't Stop in back-to-back nights at Fenway. And Tyler, you could not be further ahead in this show. This is a live show, but somehow you've already heard it, because I have thoughts. Amazing. I have opinions on Can't Stop. And you kind of nailed it. He drilled into my thoughts, if you will.
Okay. Well, let me just, before we get into it, because we are going to get into it, because we have our first guest ever on the show. And we're going to bring him on in a minute. But that's going to be addressed soon. What needs to be addressed first, a couple things. First of all, if you're a Philly person and you're going to Dead & Company this Sunday in Philly, and you don't have tickets yet, go to osirispod.com/Philly. We're doing a campaign with them. And if you haven't picked up tickets, pick them up through this link so that we can be in the good graces of the fine folks at Citizens Bank Park and Dead & Company and Live Nation. I'm going to be there. I'm excited for it. Never miss a Sunday show and all that. And I hope the show happens. I assume it's going to happen. I'm just assuming it's happening.
I think it's going to happen. Thoughts going out to John Mayer and his family. But yeah, I think that the show is going to happen. It's going to be awesome. And Philadelphia Dead, man. Like, if you know anything, Philadelphia Dead is a place that you want to go to. That 89 show with like probably my favorite version of Blow Away ever. I would, if I was anywhere near the East Coast, I'd be going to this. So yes, osirispod.com/Philly. What else do we have to tell people about? I think we have something else.
Yeah. So, okay. osirispod.com/Osiris Live. I gotta tell you, we're about 2 weeks away from the show at the Ardmore. I'm going to be interviewing Tom Hamilton, Chris Forsythe, and Daniel Donato. I'm going to interview them each for about 15 minutes, and then they're going to play a few songs with the backing band, which is Andy Cush of Garcia Peoples, Ryan Jewell, and Ron Stabinski of the Meat Puppets. And then at the end, they're all going to come up on stage and do an amazing jam. So if you're in Philly, If you're coming to the Man shows, or if you want to just make your way down to an Osiris Live show, it's so fun. If you go to osirispod.com/osirislive, you can see the ticket link there. And you can get tickets for the show that Brian's going to be hosting in Denver with Taper's Choice on August 31st, the night before the Dix show. So those are both happening, and we're psyched, beyond psyched. I'm starting to get ready for the Ardmore show. And I do want to say that we are having our first guest today. We're making our way through live tracks. We're on live track 6. There's going to be some evolution of this show. And I just want people to know that, because I want people to know that we're going to keep going through the live tracks releases. But at some point, Brian and I are going to say, all right, what's the next artist that we're going to explore? And what are the next live releases from an artist that we're going to explore? We can tell you for sure that the next one will not be the Dead. It will not be Fish, because we have lots of we have lots of Fish and Dead related content out there, but there are so many amazing artists with live releases that we want to explore that we're gonna at some point soon we're gonna say, all right, we've done X number of these, let's evaluate a different artist, and then we'll definitely come back to Dave Matthews. So I just want everyone to know that, because I don't want people to be sad when that happens, and I want people to keep watching and keep listening, because we're having a lot of fun, and I think people listening and watching are having fun too. That's all I have to say, Brian.
I think the only thing I would add to that is just the goal of this show is to explore the differences and the connections of live artists in a lot of cases. I think at its simplest point, that's what we're hoping we do with this show. And we know who the next artist is. And we think that there's some really cool connections to Dave Matthews' band, as well as a lot of really unique differences. We're going to have one of our very close friends join us for a lot of those episodes. So if you like what we've done thus far, I would say trust that even if we're not covering your favorite band, trust us to take the leap to another artist at some point here in the not too distant future. And I would also say we want to keep live tracks fresh for us. We don't want to get to a point where we're discounting any of these volumes because we're just listening to so much over and over and over again, and we want to keep that fresh. So I think that's dropping the hint of where we're going with this.
One of my top five artists of all time. I'll just throw that in there too. That probably maybe makes it easier, but it doesn't matter, because that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about something else. I think
we're here to talk about Live Tracks Volume 6, which is our second 2000s era Dave Matthews, which, if you know anything about this show thus far, you know that that is an area of unfamiliarity for RJ and I, which I am discovering is my favorite thing about going through Dave Matthews, is going through eras I have no knowledge of, no insight of. I was not even thinking about the band at this point in time. We're going to bring on our guest, Robbie B, here. We are hearing Robbie audio only, so if you're listening to the podcast, you're not seeing any of us. As Robbie told us before, basically if you mashed up RJ and I into one person, you would get Robbie. So just imagine that as we're talking to him, but we're really excited to bring him on. We've been talking for the last week or so about Dave. I've learned a ton about this 06 era from Robbie, and as Tyler says, 04 to 06 is my favorite DMB sound and era. Really excited to get into this. Without further ado, let's bring Robbie on. Robbie, how are you doing? And welcome to the live show.
So, gentlemen, so glad to be here. It's truly an honor. I've listened to so much Osiris stuff since the beginning, and so glad to, come on and be a help.
Appreciate that, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. And nice to meet you, Robbie. Thanks for all your support and all the compliments of what we're doing. It's very helpful. And keeps us going. All right, so we're going to Fenway Park. There's two shows in 06, July 7th, July 8th. I think I mentioned this on a previous episode, or maybe it was HF Pod, but I saw the Police at Fenway Park in 2007, the summer of 07. Yep. So I was 1 year behind this, but I lived in Boston for a couple of years. It's like seeing anything at a huge baseball stadium is kind of a crazy experience. But I guess before we get into the show, Brian, is there anything that you want everyone to know? I think people know Fenway Park. They play baseball there. Come on in.
They play baseball there. It's the oldest active park in the majors. I would just say I found it interesting. So Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles played a show there, the first concert there in 1973. And then there's no concerts for 30 years. Bruce Springsteen's The Rising Tour visited there in 2003. And since then, there's been at least one show a year. You get Jimmy Buffett, Billy Joel, Fish, Tom Petty, Rolling Stones, The Police, as you mentioned, Aerosmith, Roger Waters, as well as Dave Matthews. It's really kind of like the other bands as well, Dead and Company, have played there. But it's really kind of the destination in the Boston area. If you don't want to play Foxborough, which is kind of a dump, Gillette is massive. It's kind of the nice space for arena and then some bands to play. Robbie, have you been to Fenway Park?
Oh, yeah. I was actually at these shows. And so,
were you?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I wasn't at the Fish shows in the one in 09, and then I guess what was the other, 19? And I wasn't able to make it out for those. But yeah, you know, 06, well, between, you know, Coventry and Hampton when they came back, I saw a ton of DMB shows and Humphrey shows just because, you know, a huge live music fan. And I've been seeing Dave since like 96. In college, and I went to school at Syracuse, so you know, they play the Northeast obviously a lot, and so I saw them quite a bit during college too. But so I was at these shows, and stadium experience is just not good for DMB. Like I saw them at Giants Stadium a few times, and you know, it's just so much better now that they're playing slightly smaller venues, like. Especially not, I live on the West Coast. I live in San Francisco now. And so now that they're playing like, you know, the Greek out here as opposed to Shoreline. Mm. And I, the Greek is next to the Gorge, my favorite venue on earth. I haven't been to Red Rocks, so I can't really.
The Greek is amazing. When I lived out there, I went to a lot of shows at the Greek.
It's
a pretty special place.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so like, for example, like, I want to say maybe like 2008 was the first time I think they played the Greek, and they played a 3-night run out here as opposed to like 1 night at Shoreline. And I'm like, sweet, three DMB shows as opposed to one at Shoreline. And the thing about Shoreline, and this is just kind of getting into like inside baseball stuff, is like the only way they got Shoreline built is that the residents of Mountain View, California got first dibs on the pavilion tickets. And that's why it's so hard to get pavilions if you ever come out for Shoreline shows.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so, because it's a really, you know, it's like where it's Google's in Mountain View. It's like a really rich town. And so, so it's really tough to get good seats, and the lawn can be iffy, and DMB lawns can be iffy anyway. So, so I always try to be a pavilion where people are actually paying attention and, you know, focusing on the music. And so, these Fenway shows, I was kind of medium way back, just with a bunch of people, probably like 10 friends, and just kind of bouncing around. We had seen several shows on that tour, and then eventually went out and saw some of the shows out west later in the year, and ending at the Gorge, like, because they always play Labor Day at the Gorge, three shows, and I've done that. I did that 01 to 08, and then I stopped doing that once Fish came back. But I still have friends who go every year and have gone like 20 years, because that is kind of their like festival, if you will. And so that's kind of my experience with them. But so I don't know about you guys, but
Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. Really good context in terms of your overall history. And do we want to dive into kind of what was happening around this time? Should we dive into, because we got two shows, should we just dive into where the band was at in 2006?
Sure. So my opinion on where the band was at, and you guys have touched on this. I've listened to the first four that you put out. I didn't catch yesterday's yet. You know, as you had touched on in the 2004 show, the Golden Gate Park show, which I actually was vending at and made like $400 at, because nobody vends at DMB shows. They don't there's no shakedown or anything like that. And I'm like, and I know the Golden Gate Park area so well, cause I lived out there. And so I'm like, I set up a thing and just selling beers. Like, you know, we got there at like 9 a.m. and there was just people walking by and it was just like a killer day. And that's when I had like no money. So it was very useful. And anyway, getting back to the band, let's not lose track, but the band, you know, I agree with you guys. You know, I think, you know, the first, you know, starting with Remember Two Things, Under the Table, Crash, before the Crowd Streets, there really isn't a song on there I dislike. Am I the biggest Crash and Satellite fan? No, but those are still very well written songs.
Yeah.
Then Lily White Sessions, and even those songs on the 2000 tour, and when you're starting to hear them, and you're like, Grey Street, wow, this song's awesome. And Busted Stuff, Sweet Up and Down, Raven, Digging a Ditch, Grace Is Gone, all those songs they played that 2000 tour, which was a lot of stadiums. You know, they played the Gorge, they played the Meadows, they played some, you know, a lot of amphitheaters, but they played some stadiums too, and like Giant Stadium and Pittsburgh and a few others. And so I'm really amped for this next album. And then, you know, and I was kind of reading the message boards and different things, and like, and then I'm reading that they're kind of scrapping it, and Dave's saying it's too dark, and I'm like, you know, I'm like, all their material's been kind of dark lyrically. Like it's very upbeat, just if you're not listening to the lyrics, but like all their songs are kind of dark.
Yeah.
Or not all, but a lot of their songs are kind of dark. And so I was kind of troubled by that. And then when they said Glenn Ballard, and I looked up his history, and I'm like, yeah, that might not be good. And then Every Day comes out. Of course, I go get it. Day comes out. First singles, I Did It. And I'm like, yeah, this sounds nothing like the band I know. And then I get to the end of the album, and just literally like the tragedy of all time, Every Day, which is the one. Not the tragedy of all time. I'll say it's like maybe ninth on the list. but that they took number 36, which is an all-time classic from the early days, you know, going back to like 92, 93. And they kind of transformed the music into Every Day. And it's just like, wow, there's not one song I really like that really grabbed me. And then they kind of, and then to close, they just, you know, tear apart one of the songs that I always liked, just always loved, and just added, you know, kind of nonsense lyrics to. And so I was kind of troubled about that. And then the tour that summer was just so, you know, just, I mean, every show had the Lovely Ladies, who, you know, were their three like backup singers they'd bring out, but they could only come out on certain songs, but they were on the whole tour. So the songbook was even more limited than it usually is in an album touring cycle. Like the best years to see Dave are the years when they're not touring on an album, because then the songbook opens up more, because then it's more like, what does he want to play? And it's not so much, we got to promote this album. And this year, you know, they're promoting Every Day. So you're getting 8, 9 Every Day songs per show. And this is 2001. And then the Lovely Ladies even limits it more. So the shows are just, you know, repeat after repeat after repeat. And then, you know, going into 02, you know, they put out Busted Stuff. And I think I remember it came out the same day as Radiohead's Hail to the Thief. And so I was excited, and this is still when we're buying CDs, and went out and bought those, and listening to Busted Stuff, and I'm like, yeah, these are the songs I remember, but I'm like, they hacked a verse off of Grey Street, the new song they added, You Never Know, was pretty good, but I'm like, all these songs don't sound better than like the bootleg version I grabbed off of Napster.
Totally.
Like, those sound more organic than, yeah, you know, what you did in the studio. And so the O2 tour was better. It was fine. There was a lot of good shows. I saw probably, you know, 4 or 5 shows. Probably about 8 shows that tour. And 03 I thought was great. Again, 03 was a non-touring year. So that's when you got Last Stop came back. Dreaming Tree came back. Spoon came back. 34 didn't come back till 2005. But like a lot of songs, because 03 wasn't a touring year. And then, like you guys said on the 2004, the Golden Gate Park show, you know, they had those four new songs, which, you know, were upbeat and like positive. And so you're like, oh, sweet, this new album's going to be okay. Dave's through his dark phase or whatever nonsense they covered to, you know, why they're going to bring in a studio, you know, hack to produce their album. And they, you know, and, you know, Hello Again, even though that's, you know, a song about like murdering somebody and, you know, it coming back to haunt you if you listen to the lyrics. Joyride, Good Good Time, and I'm forgetting the other. Oh, Sugar Well, which is my favorite of all.
Sugar
Well. Love that song. And those were killer. And I was at that Golden Gate Park show, like I said, and they all sounded tremendous. And by this tour, they had all worked out because they'd played them all summer. And I remember I was driving to, Tahoe, listening to, because it was right when the tour started, and my friend texted me because he was at the SPAC show when Jay-Z came out. He's like, oh my God, Jay-Z came out with Fish. And I'm like, oh, I'm listening to the DMV show with, I'm listening to the new DMV songs, blah, blah, blah. So we're going back and forth. And I remember that was the first time I heard him. And so then we get to 05, which is kind of, we're almost to where we're at now. And 05, Stand Up's coming out. And again, completely amped about it. And I see the track list and it's just like, okay, Hello Again's on there, but then it's a bunch of songs I don't really know. And so, yeah. And then I listen to them and they're more upbeat. And, but there's no flow to the album. And if you've listened to the studio recording, and then the songs would just be kind of just like the set list that summer were just like kind of a melange of just, you know, songs thrown together. There wasn't like as much flow as they usually had in their set list. You know how you'd say like, you know, they'd have like 3-4 intro songs and then it would go into like, you know, a bigger jam song. And then kind of like, you know, they'd have a suite of songs and then tie it and then slow it down. But here it was just like, it's just like night one of this run. And it would be, you know, it was just a ton of songs thrown together. And night two has a little better flow in my opinion. And then in 06, you know, they're still touring behind Stand Up and, you know, but there's less and less Stand Up material. Like if you notice on these shows, there's only two Stand Up songs in both sets. And I think that shows the band really didn't, you know, really knew that the audience didn't really take to it too much. And what's coming in 07 is, Number 27, Cornbread, Ehe, some great songs. You guys will get to these in, I think, a couple of
volumes.
Yeah, and these are great songs that are coming that never make it to studio albums either. And when you get to the 09, Grugrex King album, which also has its own problems. But anyway, you'll get to that another day. So they had just this weird divergence between live and studio. Like they would always bring it. Like Dave always has the energy. Like he never mails it in on stage. And, you know, they always bring the energy. And just like, you know, how the set list is organized can be iffy. But here, you know, but that's kind of how I take it from the 90s when they could do no wrong in my eyes. To 2006, and it was just like this going from like, oh, we write these great songs, we road test them, the crowd loves them, and then we ditch them for studio albums, and that just happened time and again, literally for like the first 8 years of the aughts. So sorry to talk that much.
Interesting.
No, that's really helpful context.
So this show. I mean, being a live release, and I know there was a comment yesterday that the audio isn't great, and Brian, I know, has thoughts about Dave's voice, and but as Live Track 6, which I think these came out in around this time, right? Around the time
didn't these start coming out?
In
04? Yeah,
3 months, 2 months after the shows happened.
Yeah.
So is it just because it was like a huge venue, big show? Because if you look at like the show flow for both of these shows on Ants Marching, they're both like not great. So I'm just wondering, like, what do you think the rationale was for putting these two out there?
Yeah, I think it's the same thing you were saying. Like, there's one coming up that you have, which is a Vegas show. Mm. And I think it was MGM. So, like, you know, obviously, you know, a venue we're familiar with. And they put out a show that's another show that just – it was just like – because they didn't – like, they played Vegas in 01 that I went to. And they had and they actually had Panic opening for them. And they played two nights. And then they had skipped Vegas for several years. And then they played a couple nights at MGM. And I didn't go to those shows. And then they released those right after on Live Tracks. And I downloaded it, and it was nothing special. So I think they were releasing, like the shows from the 90s and such. They were releasing, like, these are shows we're really proud of. And then they were like, oh, event shows that people were, you know, that people were hyped. They thought people were hyped up about or whatever. They would release like this. And so in the Live Track series. And so now, I mean, even now, I mean, they already have shows from like 2019 in Live right. Tracks. And then, right. you know, so, you know, they've continued to do that. But then they also have like the DMB Live series, which gets more into the 92, 93 shows. And that's more what I listen to nowadays. You know, I've heard all these songs enough times. Like, I'd rather hear the old days of, like, you know, sure. when they jam things out a little more, and it was a little more, you know, the core five guys that started the band. And the band has changed so much. I mean, you know, Leroy's passed, obviously. Boyd's been kicked out of the band. I mean, they've added Rashawn. They've, you know, they had Peter Greiser as keyboardist. He left the band. They added Butch, who I thought was added so much to the music. Let him go. And then now added Buddy Miles again as another keyboardist. So they've gone to three keyboardists, or they're on a dead like pace. And it's really, you know, I just like listening to the core five kind of shows back in the early 90s anymore.
It's interesting to me. We were talking about this yesterday. We were kind of wondering, like, what is the rationale behind some of these releases? Because we had two releases back to back that were mid 90s. They didn't have a ton of like shock value, if you will. Like, it was more kind of a celebration of the songs from Under the Table and Dreaming. And then obviously the Crash release party from 96. And it's interesting to me that, like, you know, the two bands that we can compare this to is obviously the Dick's Pick series from the Dead and Live Fish from Fish. Both of those were coming out as those bands were not playing music anymore. Like, the Live Fish series takes you through the hiatus, and then it's done. They launch the app and they start releasing archival shows while also releasing every show as it happens. The Dick's Pick series launches in 93, but, you know, really takes off in the late 90s and early 2000s. Live Tracks are happening as the band is still evolving mm-hmm. and as the band is still growing. And so, like, to your point, it's interesting that they would have these event shows and say, well, a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of thought were put into these shows, so we should capture them, kind of in the same way I would imagine they did the Central Park show that they played back yes. in 03, the Gorge show from 02, you know, one of the early Labor Day shows. So it seems like
yes.
a challenge of how do we celebrate our archives while also showcasing where the band is right now.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because, like, I completely agree. And, like, one thing that's always puzzled me is, like, how they haven't done any, like, couch tour type stuff. Like, they've never, you know, you'd think a band with that crowd that draws as much as they do would, you know, they don't have as hardcore fans as, like, Fish fans, you know. And I'm now, like, when, like, in the, like, late 90s, I was probably a bigger DMB fan, but, like, now I'm a much bigger Fish fan, just because, you know, I've listened to all the DMB that I really need to. And I just go back for, like, memories at this point. But, like, you know, you know, the Fish crowd obviously, you know, does fine with couch tour, but even Umphrey's does a lot of, like, couch tour shows, and that's a much smaller band than DMB. And, like, so it's funny, like, they'll pick up on this, you know, aspect of it. And I wonder if that's because they are under the same management, because, like, Corn Capshaw does, like, you know, he's, like, Dave's manager, and, like, mm-hmm. you know, Brad Sands was Fish's manager, and now it's, like, Capshaw, I think, is doing it as well. I mean, don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure he's involved somehow with Fish's management company. And so, Yeah, I kind of archiving yourself live as you're playing is, you know, kind of a weird way to do it when you're picking and choosing shows and not just releasing all of them. And I've always wondered why, if you're not going to be doing couch tour, you don't want to put the money, you know, they do these huge tours way bigger than Phish does. You don't want to be dragging here all across the country to do like 4K and all this stuff. I get that. But you'd think you'd at least have like, you know, back in the day, like 2.0 era Phish, where you could at least get the show, mm-hmm. you know, from every show you went to, maybe scan your ticket and you get a free copy of the show. You know, why? What would they have to lose there? They have a soundboard copy of every show. And then people would be able to, you know, like the more hardcores like us, you know, could hear like, oh, this, you know, show was great last night, or there was a bust out. And by the way, liberation is only a term used on DMB Almanac. I still say bust out, all my friends say. So that's, I don't know who told you that. That's just said on DMV Almanac, so I guess that's where people pick it up, because that's a pretty popular site. But I find it kind of perplexing that they do it as you were saying as well, that they're kind of releasing their archives as they go, but they're also not using some of the other, you know, money making, you know, channels, if you will, that you know, Phish and, you know, Panic and Umphreys and other bands that have devoted fan bases that go to multiple shows do. And so, you know, I don't know if they're ever going to do that, or, you know, or if they're just, hey, we've got our millions and millions of millions, you know, from the radio play they've gotten and all that. And so, you know, I don't know, but it's kind of interesting. So,
some good points here from ConservVids34 that complement a lot of what you're saying, Robbie. DMB also likes to edit audio before it's released to the public, especially in Boyd had tons of mistakes. You have his volume turned down in certain areas, whereas like a band like Umphreys, a band like Phish, you know, there are times where like Phish will release a show within 10 minutes, 30 yeah. minutes of the show ending. And it sounds great, but like then they'll release an archival show and there's clearly a ton more time and effort spent on the larger right. mastering and like levels of it. But
right.
it's really fascinating to think about where they're at right now, both in terms of what they're releasing, but also at this era. RJ, I know you and I both kind of came into 2006 Dave Matthews pretty blind. What were kind of your impressions going in, and where did you see the band upon listening to this?
Well, I think the all that context is super helpful. I mean, I think the to me, there's Dave's singing is just sort of like all over the place. And the songs are kind of all over the place too, you know. There's like, and you can see it in like, again, the show flow chart. It kind of goes up and down. There are songs that I think that just kind of happen and then they move on. but there are some really cool moments too. I mean, you know, getting into kind of like some of the themes that we're talking about. I mean, to me, we talked yesterday about what would happen if Dave Matthews had, you know, a guitar player from the beginning. But listening to these shows with Butch Taylor, like if he had a piano player from the beginning, would that have enhanced the sound from the beginning, or is it still better as a guest thing?
They did. Peter Greiser, if you go back and listen to the really early shows, and I don't know if he's an official member, but his last show is 3/23/93, which I consider one of the top three shows I've ever heard by them. And that was his last show. So I think he didn't want to, almost like Holdsworth, who like didn't want to like, oh, this band's kind of becoming a thing. I don't want to make music my career. But if you listen to the early stuff, and there are live tracks from 92, I think they're way down the way, you'll get to them eventually, but like Peter Greiser was a keyboardist in the band from 91 to 93. He wrote a song called People, and if you look at the Liberation list or whatever you want to call it, it's the number one song, because it was his song. It hasn't been played in like since like 93, and so I mean, what's that at this point? That's, you know, 29 years. So, you know, so that obviously it's never going to get played, but like, you know, and then 93 he left, and then they didn't, Butch didn't come back till 98. And that, but that 94, 95, 96, 97 was like their, like, you know, best period. Like, they did not play a bad show in that period. And so if they'd had, and Tim played a lot with them even in those early days, and he was never an official member, but like, he played a lot with them in those early, early days. And it was, and there were a lot of Dave and Tim shows too. And some of those come across in the live tracks as well. So yeah, you'll see them. People was teased on bass in 2012. Concert Vids 34, man, you know your stuff. That is awesome. Yeah, bring back Spotlight. Yeah, Spotlight, I don't think is coming back, Brent. Brett, sorry about that. Yeah, Spotlight was kind of a song about not being famous, and kind of, they obviously blew up, and so don't think that one's coming back. But it's a great song, so you can kind of look it up.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, so I think
melt the guns of Fish or Washington. Yeah, if you will. We know they're not coming back, but we still ask.
Yeah, getting in line there. Yeah, it hasn't been played since the fall of '94 tour, which was, that was one great song. That's a great song. I'm sure that was, I think that was in the Crash sessions. And like, they just dropped it and then never played it live after the fall. They played like every show fall 94 and then just like didn't make the Crash final cut. And that's it.
Yeah.
Looking at our comments here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's the, one of the things that sticks out to me about these shows, Brian, what about you? What sticks out? I mean, we, you know, there's so much happening in these two shows. There's at least almost 40 tracks as it were between the two. What were some of the things that stuck out to you?
I think, Two initial things. I think first and foremost, this sounds like a looser, slightly sloppier band than we were hearing in the 90s. There are some changes that are missed. There are some like there's a little bit more looseness with how do we extend a song, and like as a result, you get really cool jams and Bartender. You get a really cool Jimmy thing. I want to pause on this because I don't know, I honestly don't know if this is like a regular thing, but like that was the first time I ever heard an extended version of Grace Is Gone. So like as I was listening to this, this sounded like a completely different band from what we've been listening to in the first five volumes that have, aside from volume two, have been rooted in the 90s and obviously 2000, where you hear the band in the mid 90s, extremely tight, and in the late 90s and early 2000s, experiment, but still very tight. And I loved that. But this was a totally different side. This reminded me of, I went and saw Bob Dylan last night, and I was thinking a lot during the concert because it was my first phoneless concert I've ever been to. And so I had just nothing but thoughts throughout the entire show. I had no time to check Twitter, no time to text anyone. And I was thinking a lot about Dave Matthews. And I was thinking, like, I'm watching Bob Dylan at 81. Dylan has been through so many different periods in his career and so many periods where his fans hated him for what he was doing and he didn't care and he pushed on. And then he made something that people really connected with. And I was thinking about Dave Matthews Band in 2006, 15 years into their career as a band, and how many ebbs and flows they've gone through and how many they're about to go through. And the fact that like you're hearing a band that sounds different from what you would have heard 5, 6, 7, 10 years before, but you're hearing them still search for what is possible in their music. And that really fascinated me as listening to this. And that is something that like, I'll continue being fascinated by regardless of the artist. So I thought this was a little bit of a sloppier volume and I really liked that. It really made me enjoy it. The other thought I had, and this kind of ties into what you were talking about earlier, Robbie, this conundrum the band seems to have in terms of the post Lily White songs, because I really wonder what would have happened with Dave Matthews Band had they released, had they pushed forward with those Lily White songs and released that as a proper album in 2001. What happens in 2001? What happens in 2002? Because by all accounts, and correct me if I'm wrong, Robbie, but like the Everyday songs for the most part haven't totally hung around and like really caught on with the fan base. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I did a little, and it would definitely be a very little analysis. So taking a look at the stand up songs, so the Everyday songs, it's absolutely true. They still play Everyday a ton. They play So Right off and on what you are off and on. But like I did it, which was the first single. You never really hear that much anymore. You'll hear it, you know, some tours it'll come back for a couple playing. They had Space Between, which I mean was on the radio so much in like fall of 2001, early 2002. And like that went away for a couple of years. But then looking at the stand-up song, so I just did a little math off DMB Almanac. So since 2000,
God, I love when people bring math to this show. Thank you.
Who doesn't? So I'm all just looking at it. So since 2008, Dream Girl, track one on Stand Up, only been played 11 times. Older Hill, 66 times. Stand Up, 71. American Baby intro, 2 times. My personal favorite song on the album when played live, not really on the album. American Baby, first single on the album, only played 5 times.
Including this run.
No. I'm saying since 2008. I'm saying.
I got you.
So saying, has it stuck with the band? So you're talking 14 years. Smooth Rider, 14 times. Everybody Wake Up, 9 times. Out of My Hands, 89 times, but 30 of those were Dave and Tim. Hello Again, 18 times. Bayou, over 100. That's been a set closer. Not my personal favorite, but played quite a bit. Stolen Away on 55th and 3rd, 38 times. You Might Die Trying, over 175 times. That one has kind of stuck around. Steady As We Go, 12 times. Hunger for the Great Life, 14 times. So so I think they even realize like that the band has not, you know, just can't, you know, people really didn't really take to it. And I see some of the good comments here. You know, it makes perfect sense. There we go. Sorry, there. I'm reading here. So I think they even realized just by the number of, you know, the play count in 14 years, you know, okay, let's take out 2 years for COVID, 12 years, you know, a lot of these songs have been played like on average one time a year. And usually it's like they played it 12 times 1 year and then haven't played it like the other 11 years. And so, so I think they even realized the band hasn't stuck around. I could have done a similar like count with the everyday songs. Yeah. And I think it would be pretty similar. I know that
it's kind of wild to think that they like almost overthought this process. They had really good songs and then said, wait, let's go back in the studio and redo this entirely. And then those are the songs that didn't stick with that. Like had they gone with their gut, who knows where they would have been.
And here, and again, they brought in another producer, Mark Batson, who I was not familiar with. Glenn Ballard, you know, I know from like the Aerosmith songs from the 90s when he kind of changed their sound with all those like Alicia Silverstone videos and stuff that I'm sure we all enjoy as teens in the 90s. But those songs were not particularly good as far as Aerosmith goes, but the videos were good. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But Mark Batson, I was unfamiliar with him, but, you know, it looked like he's worked with a number of like legitimate, you know, very talented artists, but they didn't really fit in the you know, organic DMB mold. And so, and he gets a lot of writing credits. You know, I was looking even at the writing credits, like he has a lot of writing credits on these. And so, again, that just tells to me kind of rushed and like, you know, they had that whole summer where everybody by the end of the summer, you know, that Golden Gate Park show was the last show of the summer. Everybody, you know, loved Sugar Will. It wasn't like people were going to the bathroom. Everybody loved Hello Again, Joyride, you know, and it's like, you know, read the room. You know, if you can see people are liking these songs, this isn't, you know, Trey seeing like, oh, half the audience is going to the bathroom during Time Turns Elastic. Yeah, okay, maybe we should probably stop playing that. This is, you know, Dave can see people are actually grooving and loving these songs. And I just don't get why they would at least not, you know, okay, maybe you want to add, okay, you've only got 4 songs that you played that summer, 4 new songs. You have to add at least, you know, 6 to 10 other songs to make an album. Fine, add some of those stand-up songs, but why would you even ditch these songs? Like, yeah. I just don't get it.
I'll always thank Time Turns Elastic for allowing me to do the bathroom and grab a beer and get back to my seat to relax for set break. So yes. I'll say that. but really good point here as well from ConcertBiz, and it ties into what you were saying. They recorded with Ballard because they wanted hit songs. Lily White Sessions was canned because the band built a studio in their hometown with horrible acoustics. And yeah, I mean, what we hear on, you know, you can listen to the You can hear, listen to the full Lily White Sessions album, and it doesn't sound polished. And for me, I think you said it earlier, that's one of the joys of the record. But we should probably, I want to hear really quickly before we jump to our award segment. Robbie, you have two really good themes here that you've touched on a bit, but I just want to get your thoughts on both of the themes that you addressed with these releases, if you want to dive into that. The first, the new band members.
Yeah. So I thought, 2005 and this era, let's say 2005 to 2008. So that's the stand-up era, because the next album comes out in 2009. So that era. So you have Rashawn Ross, who goes from Soul Live, and he guested with Krasno a lot. And I know, of course, you guys, I listen to Krasno show when he has an artist on that I, you know, I have it on my podcast feed. When he has an artist on, I know I listen to it. He's a great, puts on a great show for you guys. He's guested with Dave a ton and introduced me to Soul Live. Like I've seen them open and, you know, and I've gone to a few of their shows when they've been here, like at the Fillmore. I live right down the street from the Fillmore here in San Francisco. So I've seen Soul Live a few times. And Rashawn just joined the band and was an official and is listed still as like an official member of the band. And then yet Butch Taylor never really was. He was never listed as an official member of the band, never got any writing credits, never did anything. And then all of a sudden, and he was such a fixture, it was like 98 there, 99 there, 2000, all these years. And then all of a sudden 2008, it's like, you just got an email like, yeah, Butch Taylor won't be joining us. Tim Reynolds will. And it's like, huh. And so there was, I think they were kind of in a funk. And so they're trying to change it up and like, okay, maybe we add a second horn player. And again, obviously, you know, LeRoy, obviously in 2008, you know, had an ATV accident and decides to fly and passes away. And I remember like texting with all my friends. We couldn't believe it. Like this was right when Twitter came out and like, I didn't even have a Twitter yet, but my friend like saw it on Twitter and like was like, you know, basically that was like when I got a Twitter account, cause I was like, oh my God, I got to see this. And like it, you know, I couldn't believe it. And then the fact that they got Coffin and, you know, from the Flecktones, who I, you know, was very familiar with from guesting with Dave, and I had seen a couple of Flecktones shows as well. And I'm like, well, you know, he's super talented, so they'll hang on. But I'm like, you know, it's like, I was shocked almost that one of, you know, the core five that started the band, you know, passed, and they just, I mean, they took like a month off and kept going. Yeah. It's like if Paige passed away tomorrow, God forbid, like, it's not like, you know, Fish would push back the date and like, be like, yeah, we'll just see you in August. Like there's no way, you just know that. And it just struck me as almost kind of like, weird. Like I was just kind of like, I didn't see any more shows that year in 08, but like you know, and I know they came back with like a huge Bartender, like the first song, first show back. It was in LA, I believe, and I think they released it as one of the live tracks. They released his last show and then the first show back. And so I wonder if that was part of the reason that all these issues with some of the songwriting was them trying to change things up. They're like, okay, well, changing the songs from songs that play well live to maybe songs we don't road test and we're just going to release them. Okay, well, that doesn't work twice in a row. So maybe we'll try some new band members and we'll change things up. And so I got to think either Butch wanted more money or they just said, we're going to go towards twice as many horns and an electric guitar. We don't really have room for a piano. That's like 10 people on stage at that point. And like, so, you know, I'm not sure what happened there. And then obviously when Boyd left the band, they had to have another soloing instrument. So they brought Buddy Miles back into the band. So obviously I know Butch played with them like one more time at some benefit a few years ago, but so I think there's not super hard feelings, but like the fact that they brought a keyboardist back in the band and it wasn't Butch, who everybody, you know, I know, enjoyed his playing, but they brought just a new guy into the band. Yeah, that kind of puzzled me. And then basically, you know, another thing that they've really gone in the last, especially in the more recent years, but like their cover choices, have always been, you know, kind of what I say, Watchtower is always their main cover choice, and it was the Michael Hedges version. So it wasn't, they weren't covering the well-known Jimi Hendrix version. People know the Dylan, you know, obviously the original. People know the Jimi Hendrix version, but then the Michael Hedges interpretation, is the one that they cover. And then they covered a lot of Lanois songs early, you know, The Maker, Beauty of Winona, great songs. Beauty of Winona, I saw the last version ever played, I think it was like 2000. And amazing song, Wish They'd Bring It Back, No Reason They Shouldn't. But anymore, they just, it's almost like Wedding Band covers, like as I wrote here, but like, you know, it's like Burning Down the House, Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again, Fly Like an Eagle. Like, just, it's just like, pick something, you know, like Fish has introduced me to so many, you know, band, and Umphrey's too. And like, but even Fish more, like, it's like so many bands that I didn't know. And, you know, and that got me really into them. Like, I didn't know Little Feat really at all until Halloween 10. And like, I mean, I'd heard of them, like my dad, like talked about them, but like, I'd never really listened to them. And then they played, you know, Waiting for Columbus. And then, you know, it was okay. And I didn't really know it, but then I'm like, oh, if this band really influenced Fish a lot, then, you know, and I love Fish, so I should really check this band out. And now I listen to them a lot. I'm like, wow, this band's great. And, you know, and so I like when other bands introduce me to other bands, but when it's like, well, you're only playing songs that are on Classic Rock, Z95 or whatever, you know, it's like, well, everybody knows those songs. And then you're just like, that's just fan service. And it's like, challenge your audience a little more, you know, it's like, you know, they, you know, I think people, if you pick good songs, people will still listen to them. It's like, you know, how many people knew, you know, Sneakin' Sally Through the Alley until Fish played it? And now it's like, right, people go more nuts when that song comes on than, you know, there aren't 10 more songs that people go crazier for than when they hear that first, like, you know, little bass line coming in, and drums coming in when they play it. You know, but I didn't know that song before I heard 12/30/97. Right, and you know, so, and I could give you 20 other examples. So so those are just two things that I think are, you know, problems that that the band has really encountered in the 2000s. And, you know, and it's a band that's working through things. And like I said, you know, it's 91 till now, other than the COVID year. I mean, Dave, in some form, they had that one year where they had the DMV caravan, where it was like more like a traveling festival, but still Dave was still the main headliner. He has not taken a year off. And it's like, he maybe should. And I'm guessing it's the same reason, like with the Dead, where like they have such a big organization. Like, he doesn't want to like have a year where like all these guys who've been with him for probably 20, 25 years at this point, they've been a big band for 25 years at this point. And like, all these people to not work for a year, especially now the economy's kind of, you know, shaky, whatever. And, you know, it's almost like he feels obligated to tour, when I think the best thing that might happen would be to take a year off, reassess, and like, you know, really think, okay, what's worked for us in the past? What made us rise from like playing Flood Zone in 1993 to playing Hampton for New Year's 95?
Right.
Like, to, yeah, to, what, to go what is that trajectory? That trajectory is so fast. That's like, I mean, that's a tiny place to going to the mothership in, you know, literally 2.5 years. And it's, you know, and, you know, obviously they're not going to get any bigger, but like, to get people, you know, more engaged with them, like where they're part of the zeitgeist anymore. And I don't think they're part of the zeitgeist. I think the fans are the fans, and like, you know, people in college will listen to them, but I don't think, it's not like it was. You don't hear, when a new Dave Matthews album comes out, at least, well, I don't listen to a ton of radio, but, you know, my friends who do don't ever mention, you know, like, oh, I heard the new Dave song, because they all know I'm, you know, Dave fan. And they'll mention when they hear a song on the radio, like, oh, I like this song, blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, when that Come Tomorrow album came out in 2018, no one, you know, there were a lot of good songs on that album. And but nobody mentioned hearing anything on the radio, and they're totally out of the zeitgeist now and just out of the you know, music communication. And maybe that's due to trends, you know, hip hop's bigger, EDM's bigger, etc. But you know, I think if anything, Dave just needs a year off. And even if it's like a hard choice and on the road, he's like, hey, you know, it's what we need. But he really needs to kind of think about, not that I need to tell a worldwide successful musician what to do, but if you want to get back to the success that they had, I think that would help them a lot.
So it's a good place to transition to the awards segment, because I think I really appreciate all that context. It makes me think even more deeply about this release, in the sense of kind of what we were talking about earlier, that this band had all this success. They've never taken a year off, and how do you evolve on the fly? And that's a really challenging thing to do, I think, for any band. And I think, you know, for me and RJ, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. Like, I walked away from this, like, having an even further appreciation for Dave Matthews Band, listening to them in a year that I was totally unfamiliar with, that they do not sound in a lot of cases like the band that I fell in love with in high school and early college. And ultimately, like, just gave a little bit more depth to who this band is overall and the challenges they face. Did you walk away from that, RJ, with those sort of thoughts, or are we going to have our first agreement of the show? Disagreement.
No. Yeah. I think it's, I think the shows were good. I mean, there, it was a fun and kind of wild ride. I assume being there was pretty cool. You know, it's a classic place, obviously. Some of the jams, which I think we'll talk about in a second, I thought were really great, but I do think it's like the additional people involved kind of take it up a notch, which is maybe to Rob's point, like maybe it's not great if the way you extend these jams into great pieces of improv is by expanding your band or bringing other people up. But I do think there's some cool stuff in here for sure.
Yeah.
Also, before we close out, I just want to say, you guys talked about Krasno, and he just sat in with Dave at Alpine Valley the last show on July 3rd. Yeah, he played on Liner Graves, which is cool. And he's an awesome dude. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, Trey, that's usually like Jimmy thing, Liner Graves, that's usually their sit-in songs, Watchtower sometimes, like, because I saw Trey 5-1901 come out.
San Francisco,
yeah. And that was an amazing Liner Graves. And I was already a Fish fan, but that, I'm just like, wow, he can play anything. So, yeah, that was great.
Dave sit-in in 07 at SPAC on Liner Graves is still one of my favorite things that Trey has ever played on. That was right after, I think it was his first concert experience after he went through everything in 06, 07. It's something else. It's up on YouTube.
I gotta check that out. And, yeah.
Oh my God. You will not have a dry set of eyes afterwards. Nice. And you know the context of it. And once he rips into it and the crowd responds, it's something else.
That's awesome.
Should we do our awards here? Do a rapid fire award segment?
Let's do it.
RJ, I'm so curious, because you have nothing in the dock. I give away my hand the night before we go live every night. What is your bathroom break?
Well, I guess I both of your picks I actually agree with. But there was a lot of, and this might just be because of my unfamiliarity with a lot. I know there was a comment earlier, like what we thought of some of the new songs. I was sort of like, some of these songs, I was like, wait, I've never heard this song before. So I guess if there was a song I had never heard before, I probably would have gone. I think night one, Louisiana Bayou.
Yeah, it was night one towards the end.
Yeah.
Just that would be my top. That'd be my top.
Understandable. Topic. Understandable.
It's an interesting way that they frame the end of the set here on night one, because you've got a lot of classic songs plus, like, you know, The Last Stop, you got a big Jimmy thing. And then they do this segment of Can't Stop, Hunger for the Great Light, Louisiana Bayou before going into Ants Marching. I went with Can't Stop on both nights because I think that might be to this point in time, and I don't know what's to come, but that might be the worst Dave Matthews song I've ever heard. I actively cringed both times I listened to that song, and I'm heading to the bathroom, and I will come back. I enjoyed Hunger for the Great Light. Louisiana Bayou, I can see being kind of like a modern day Ants Marching, but Can't Stop both times. I'm going to have to miss part of Crush the next night, which is going to suck. But Robbie, what is your bathroom break?
Yeah. So for the first one, mine was basically Stay, not so much a bathroom song, but it's the last song of the encore. And I've done this many times when it's the last song of the encore, because I know it's the last song. It's just Head Out. I've seen it so many times. It follows me around, like Down with Disease follows me around. And it's of all their like set closing songs, I think it's their worst. Like, you know, Ants, Watchtower, anything else I'd rather hear than Stay. And especially when they had the lovely ladies, not at these shows, but like in like 01, 02. Oh my God, it was just atrocious. Cause you just hear that makes you wanna. And then them doing that, it just blew my, I just couldn't stand it. And then I said for 7-8, Sweet Caroline, as both a music fan and a baseball fan, because Red Sox fans, yeah, good job. I'm a Cubs fan, wearing Cubs hat right now, as is Brian. And they wanted, you know, we've been doing Take Me Out to the Ball Game since Harry came over as a broadcaster, I want to say in like 82. And they invented that tradition in like 2002, I believe. I think they started it like 98, 99, but they only did it when they were
winning. They started selling the pink Red Sox hats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then they started doing it every night, 02. I read up on the history of it before I went in here because I didn't want to offend our Northeast listenership. But not a big fan of Neil Diamond. I don't know what ties he has to the Red Sox. He's not from there. I was like, what ties does he have to Boston? But they just picked it as a song.
What about MVPs?
It's pretty cool when it happens, though, live at a baseball game. It's a fun baseball moment. I'm just saying.
Okay, good to know. I mean, I have seen a show at Fenway. I've seen a game at Fenway as well. And
we're getting a lot of Sweet Caroline comments here. I appreciate it. Thank you. I really appreciate how like aggressive everybody is commenting on this, because I felt the same. I was like, this is a wedding band moment. MVPs, RJ, what do you got?
Well, I'm gonna give it to you, a guest. I guess there's a little bit of a debate, maybe, or disagreement about whether Butch Taylor's a guest or not. But I think both of my favorite gems of these two nights were heavily influenced by his involvement. So that's where I'm going.
And I would say, well, like I kind of said here, like, I mean, Carter is the most talented and literally could be MVP every night. I mean, I've literally like never seen him have an off show, but I'll say, you know, just cause I could say that for every show, I'll say Butch for these specific shows as well. Like his Jam and Bartender, which now has almost become a bathroom song for me, cause it just takes up so much of the set. And I kind of put it like TTE and Petrichor, like, you know, it just takes up so much of the set where they could put other songs I like, and they play it so often. And it just, I've seen it so many times, and he does so much with that outro jam. So, which they, you know, stopped when he left the band, they stopped having that, but the song was still super long. So I'll give it to him.
I'm going Stefan. I love what his bass does throughout this run, but I definitely agree with both of you guys. Carter is continuously my favorite part of all of these releases, and Butch adds a ton to these, which actually leads into the jam of the show. I went with one of the whole run. Mine was Bartender. I'm not as well versed I totally get what you mean, Robbie. Like, it's a 16 minute track. It seems to be long every time it's played. I still love it. It's still from like the era that I was, these Lily White songs were the first new batch of songs that I got as a Dave Matthews fan, and Bartender was such a stunning moment. Yeah. And I love the closing jam. It reminds me of the end of The Last Stop from Live Tracks 1 back in 98. Yes. And that space that they can get into, I'm all about it. So RJ, what about you? What was your jam of the show, the run?
I have to, I'm so sorry to not give our listeners something more interesting, but I think that the bartender from the first night is really great. I think that was probably my favorite. I actually really liked the warehouse from the second night, the Dancing Nancy's into warehouse. It's like the crowd as Dancing Nancy's went into warehouse was like, it seemed like there was like a fever pitch, no pun intended.
Well, that's right, a common, that those two always, like, not always, but they often lead into each other, I'd say probably like 75% of the time. And so people know when they have that Nancy's, like, well, at least when Boyd was in the band, when they had that fiddle, like, almost like the trills at the end of Bowie. And then it goes right into that stop time, like, warehouse intro, and, like, the place just goes nuts. Yeah, I absolutely love that. So, could not agree with you more. My personal picks on those, I said 7-7 Last Stop, just due to the bust out factor. I chased that song, you know, from 02 to 05, just waiting for it to be, or no, 90, like, oh, 2000 to 2003, whatever. Trying to find it. And so when I got it there, I was super excited. But not really because it was played super well, just because no real jam stood out to me for 7-7. 7-8, I love the extended Grace Is Gone. Not always played that way, with a little, like, kind of hoedown outro. And I like when they kind of change things up like that. So it's a song I don't necessarily love that much, but when they do the outro, I really enjoy that. So I'll give it to that one.
Awesome. Brian, Tyler, we owe Tyler an answer on some of these songs. What were your thoughts on some of these songs that might have been less familiar?
Well, I got to double check really quickly because as I'm pulling this up, What You Are is off of Every Day. I was familiar with that, and I really was stoked to hear that. That was one of my. If I look at the Everyday track list, and I cannot tell you the last time I listened to this, but I definitely listened to it a ton in 2001 just because I was listening to a lot of Dave Matthews. But the songs that connected with me off that album were So Right, What You Are, and Fool to Think. And What You Are, I really dug in the live setting. The American Baby intro, I definitely liked more than I liked American Baby. I remember listening to the American Baby single when it came out, and, you know, we're talking 04, 05 America, we're talking the war in Iraq, we're talking George W. Bush's second administration. Like, it felt like they were really trying to write a protest song, and it just never really landed with me, even though I really wanted it to. I dug the intro. I thought the intro was great I think it was in the encore slot during the show. And Break Free was definitely, from the newer songs, one of the songs that I enjoyed off of this larger set. I'm just pulling up the set list once again here. On night one, from a newer song standpoint, I liked Hunger for the Great Light more than I expected. And on night two, I definitely liked Break Free, even though it was bookended by American Baby and Sweet Caroline.
There you go.
Yeah. I think there's one, What You Are, that, like, it's kind of like up tempo and keeps it sort of like a more driving rhythm. And I really like that song a lot. And I don't think I had heard that before. The others, I think I had.
It feels like an updated The Last Stop to me. Like, it's got that Middle Eastern vibe to it. And it just, like, it's eerie, it's creepy, and it feels like, It to me is like one of the most successful moments on Every Day.
Well, we have exceeded our self-imposed limit of 1 hour.
And Sorry, Robbie, what happens when we have two, when we have two shows.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yes. That's a good point. Two shows. So we technically have longer, but Robbie, thank you for bringing all this knowledge and experience.
Yeah.
And also, I want to say thanks to you, Robbie, for spending so much time with us. And also, just in the spirit of what you brought here, which is, Brian and I were talking about this yesterday, thank you guys all for allowing us to explore this band that we admittedly and openly don't have a ton of experience with live. Because if we had, if two people who had never listened to fish started a show about live fish releases, the comments would not be so, you know, helpful and
supportive.
And supportive. Yeah. And so and I think it's really cool. I'm learning a lot about this fan community.
Yeah, I love all the fan comments, even the ones who are yelling at me for not enjoying Bartender. It's more, it's not that I don't like the song. I loved it. I've heard it like 50 times. Like, I'm just tired of it. That's all. But it is an extremely well-written song, but I love the comments. Everybody's been great. Really knowledgeable fan base, and it shows how many people are really, I mean, this is only what, the sixth episode?
Yeah.
And we're, you know, you've already got this many people watching live, so there's got to be 10x, 100x listening on the podcast. So this show's going to blow up. So good job, RJ and Osiris. Love almost every show. I haven't listened to all of them. Yeah, you have so many, but they're wonderful, and I'm so glad that I got the chance to be on one. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you, man.
Thanks for saying that.
Your prep, Brian, your insight, your context really, really helped out with this. And we, as this show evolves, we should definitely have you on again to talk through.
No problem.
We'll give you a chance to talk about some 90s, Dave, in the future.
Love to.
Yeah, exactly.
To just dive in and gush. That's all we'll do.
Love to. Hit me up anytime. You got my email. Hit me up anytime. I'm down.
Thank you, Robbie. Man. And I will say the next show, which will be next Tuesday, is going to be, we're going back to the 90s. And from what I understand, another show that people really, really like to talk about. I think we're going to have a guest for that show as well.
My opinion, the best show they have ever played.
Wow.
Ever.
Yes.
Wow. Awesome.
At least listen on tape. I wasn't there, but it is my favorite show to listen to. Yes.
Wow.
I've loved my listens to it, but I did not. That is, I'm very excited to dive in with a little bit more context at this point in time. And Brett, we will be in touch with you. Thank you so much.
Yes. Sorry for missing that, Brett. If we hadn't gotten back yet, we will shortly, because we'd love to have you. Cool. Right. And so we'll be back on Tuesday, Brian. Anything else before we do that?
No, I'm really excited to dive into next week. We've got an 06 or a 96 show followed by a 04 show, another 04 show, our second 04 show, and then a double batch from 2007, which is yet another year I've never explored in Dave's history. So
get you'll get a couple new songs in those 07. So that'll be cool. And those are mostly good songs that I enjoy anyway. So,
well, that's good.
Your mileage will vary.
Awesome.
So cool. Awesome, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you all next week. And thanks for all the support and comments. And thanks for those of you who are listening. Thanks for listening and share it with all your Dave Matthews Band friends. We appreciate Indeed. It.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys next week.
Osiris.